just came to see.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and that's Al Green. We could do that all day, but we have important things to talk about. Reminding you on the way to this conversation, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union's banner, is there. We are about to start a conversation about the issue of heroin in our communities. Heroin epidemic is, but epidemic has always been here. The deaths have been on the rise exponentially in the last 2 years in the state of Maryland. There are bills now being proffered in the Maryland General Assembly that would give people up to 30 years in prison for selling heroin that then was part of the overdose that killed another person. And so we're going to wrestle all that, and the person who's introducing that bill is going to join us shortly to talk, and we'll have one of our guests dialogue with her as we do that here. But we're joined now in studio by Woody Curry, a therapist in private practice and a clinical consultant who has run many programs for the last 30 years in this state and around the country. Dealing with heroin addiction, other addictions. Good to have you back in the studio with us, Woody.
Yeah, I've been around for a minute.
Yes, you have. And is it Sign?
Yes.
Sign. Mark Sign is Executive Director of the Baltimore Student Harm Reduction Coalition. Mark, good to have you here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And Peter Brun is with us, artist and curator, organized behind the New Day campaign, which I'm being part of, which challenges the social stigma around drugs, addiction, and mental illness. And his daughter passed away of a heroin overdose a year ago. And the anniversary of that was just the other day when we met for coffee.
Yesterday.
Mm-hmm. And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. And as I as introduced you before you came on, Peter Brun is a man who is wrestling with this by creating this artistic project in our community, which we'll talk about. And the young man who sold the heroin that your daughter died from is facing
55 years in North Carolina.
And Peter is among those wanting to see him released from prison.
I think he needs an opportunity to have treatment.
So this is where we are. So let's talk before we jump into the phones here. And Wayne, you're the first caller. We're going to come to your call at 410-319-8888. Can we just stop for a minute, just take a couple steps backward? And one of those steps backward is this what we're calling now this heroin epidemic, with I think it's over 480 deaths in 2014 from overdoses of heroin, which is a lot.
Is that heroin overdose or opiate overdose? Do you know?
I'm not. What I read was heroin. It could be opiate. But I'll take a look at that again in a moment. What'd you say?
You can't really separate it. It's opiate. But the dynamics that led to this was, you remember a few years ago when I was talking about these pills that you remember?
Show
we did?
Right.
Okay. That happened. Suboxone and everything else became another drug on the street. So, but the thing about the pharmaceuticals is that they are much stronger than the drugs you find on the street. So, therefore, they cost more now, and they're harder to come by, but it's enough of them out there, okay, you see? So when the people can't have the money to get the pharmaceuticals for the Percocets and those opiates, then they have to go out and buy some more heroin. You see, or something else. So the heroin thing is really, the overdose probably is, the heroin is a lot stronger than some of the other stuff that they've been taking, or it's a combination of both. So you're just seeing an extension of opiate addiction. When you specify heroin, you're just saying that's one of them, but it's a continuum. It's all part of the same game. And to separate it, you know, why not? You're going to lock up the people who overdose off of pills? A lot of these overdoses, like you said, are opiates. They're pills. Percocets and things of that nature, they're opiates. So, you know, all of the time people have been talking about drugs. When most people hear the word drugs, they think about chemicals. Alcoholism is a drug. It's the worst one. It kills more people than all of the illegal drugs combined. As far as the direct drug-human thing is concerned,
right,
it causes more damage than all of the illegal drugs combined. You see, are they going to lock up the bartenders for the people who get drunk and go out and run over somebody or go home and beat the devil out of the, you know?
Before we turn to the delegate, I just want to very quickly, Peter, if you would just very quickly relate the story that I was trying to set up.
Sure. So my daughter was actually in a healing community in North Carolina. She'd been there for 3 months, and she was doing really well and was off all the watch lists. She had been addicted to opiates for about 5 years, and she relapsed. And her relapse meant contacting somebody she knew in Philadelphia who mailed her some drugs, and she took the drugs and overdosed and died. And the authorities in North Carolina said to us, we're going to go after this guy for murder. And we said right at the very beginning, if this person is – and we didn't know who it was who sent her the drugs at first. If this person is addicted to drugs, we think that that person deserves a chance for treatment. And they went after him. Sure enough, he was a former drug buddy of hers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now sitting in jail facing this sentence. And it's such a shame because – He could contribute to our society, and instead he's facing to spend his life in jail.
Before I bring Mark Stein into the conversation, but this is probably a good opportunity to do that in just a moment, but we're just calling in now is Delegate Kathleen Dumais, who represents District 15 in Montgomery County. She's Vice Chair of the House Judiciary Committee, who is one of the sponsors or leading co-sponsors of the Bill 222, which would give felony convictions to those who, in a case like yours that happened in the state of Maryland. And Delegate Dumais, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be on.
And you all can join us, as I said, 410-319-8888. And our other guests in the studio, are just while you're here, to let you know who's here, is Woody Curry, who's a lifelong therapist and has been working with addiction for his entire career, and Peter Bruin, whose story you just heard, and Mark Stein, who is Executive Director of the Baltimore Student Harm Reduction Coalition. But describe the bill that's being introduced that seems to have a huge amount of support across the aisle in both houses.
It does. And it's a bill that would, in fact, provide that in the event that the heroin used in and that caused death, heroin or fentanyl caused to death, that the state could prosecute someone for homicide. That resulted from the use of that fentanyl or heroin. There is, and I appreciate the, and very sorry for the death of the gentleman's daughter that was just speaking. Our hearing was very emotional, and we had a panel of parents that had lost children that supported the bill. We also had a panel of parents who'd lost children that were in opposition to the bill. And the opposition was along the same lines that the gentleman that just spoke had his concern about putting an addict in jail. So I'm working with the state's attorney, John McCarthy from Montgomery, as well as others, to try and clarify what we mean by distribution. This bill is, or this, you know, proposed statute is not, we don't want to go after another addict. What we want to do is get the you know, higher up that is doing the distribution and the manufacturing. And many times, at least according to state's attorneys, they're not addicted. That's who we want to capture. So I think there will be some amendments to the bill to try and address very real concerns that, you know, adding homicide to someone who's already addicted when what they really need is treatment. None of us are disagreeing with that.
So a couple of our guests will just ask a question. This is, by the way, not a confrontational hour. This is a conversation. So I just want to let you know that.
Okay, so yeah, this is definitely a question, and it's not. I really appreciate your clarification of your intent, and I guess I'm curious how the letter or the law can be drafted to achieve its goal versus catching up people like the young man who sent my daughter the drugs. How can it be crafted?
Well, some of the wording we're still working on, but I just got that email. You know, sort of defining the distribution as not being someone that is sharing the heroin or that just, provided it and is another, we don't want to call it drug user, but, you know, we're still working on it, and I'm going to look at some other states. Where the bill came from, which you may or may not know, The federal government does have a provision, and it's not just for heroin and fentanyl. The federal government can prosecute for homicide if they can link any drug to a death. And then there is a very substantial enhanced penalty. But what we are seeing, at least according to the state's attorneys, is, for instance, in my county, Montgomery County, in 1 week in December, there were 5 deaths from one batch of heroin that had too much fentanyl in it. So a bad batch of heroin killed 5 people in my county in 1 week in December. I don't want to necessarily have the others that are using. I want to know who made it, who distributed it, and that's who I think should be held accountable. So we're struggling with how to do that language, but I promise there is going to be an amendment that tries to say distribution doesn't mean you were sharing heroin, or that you were addicted or, using it yourself. That's not who we want. We don't even want the little person on the street that's selling it to feed their own addiction. We want the people that are distributing it.
I do want to come to the heart of that in a moment, what you're just describing, Delegate Dume. Mark Sein, did you have a thought on this?
Yes. I just want to say that I do appreciate that heroin is at least being addressed in legislature, and I can understand the sentiment behind this bill. However, I feel like further criminalizing heroin distribution and just drug use in general is what this comes down to is just the wrong direction. We need to approach the heroin issue from a public health approach rather than a law enforcement approach. We've had this failed drug war for decades right now. It's put millions of people in prison. It's done little to curb problem drug use. What we really need to be focusing more on is more access to treatment programs and even broader issues, things like housing. We have to look at where the drug use comes from in the first place. It's often linked to poverty, but it's not necessarily that either. It's a public health issue overall.
I agree. I mean, I don't disagree with you, but I don't, and I agree that the, quote, war on drugs and just incarcerating everyone that used drugs or had any dealings with it was the wrong approach. And that's why we're working to craft this legislation to make it clear that I want more treatment. That's where I think most of the funding should go. But I don't think you cut law enforcement out of the picture either.
So let me ask this question and we'll come back to our guests here. I know you only have a couple minutes for this because you're in the midst of a lot of dealing on the floor. I do want to go to the phones at 410-319-8888. But we've dealt with the issue of heroin in this program for the last 23 years and of addiction a lot. And I personally dealt with it in my life since I was a teenager with friends who have been addicted to heroin and helping friends kick it, helping friends die because of their complications, their addictions, and more. So I'm very aware of it all. And so I ask that to say, if the focus is to go after those who manufacture and create the heroin, what is there anything? Where is that A in the bill, and where is that in any of our real law enforcement? I mean, that never seems to be the place they go to because it's almost impossible to go to. You know, I mean, everybody in any community knows many of the clubs and barbershops and everywhere else in town or restaurants that are fueled by heroin money, fueled by drug money, but nothing ever happens with that because people can't make the direct connections. That's where it lives, but it seems to work that. So instead, we end up convicting and putting people in jail who are low-level dealers or people who are addicted.
And what I've been told by the state's attorneys is there are a couple of things. Number one, this heroin epidemic, which is what the governor has called it, and actually that's what I said in my testimony, one of the problems is we are doing a better job regulating prescription medication, and that's less available. Heroin is cheap. And that's the reason why it's become so prevalent. But what the state's attorneys have indicated is that they can make the connection. Now, whether it's an improvement in forensic science and forensic medicine, like I said, my state's attorney has been able to make that connection. The Carroll County state's attorney said that in at least 40% of his cases, he's been able to get to, make the connection to the actual dealer or manufacturer. So apparently there are tools to do it.
And with all due respect to that, Woody, I don't want to have a question. Peter wants a question as well.
Sure.
before you have to leave. But I would really question the Carroll County State's Attorney with that statement. And I know the Montgomery County State's Attorney, and I know the one in Baltimore City and Baltimore County fairly well as human beings and and who they are. And I know what, none of them are making that claim other than that one State's Attorney, and that's just I have a hard time believing that one.
But see, what you're missing is
this is what he curried.
They understand what they see, but I don't think they understand the way the drug distribution stuff works. Everybody is an entrepreneur all the way down the line. You see, and most of the people that are out dealing on the streets and everything else, they put their own ingredients in what they get.
Right.
You see, they are the ones who cut it, and then they pass it down to somebody else, and they see that it's not strong enough for them to make any money, and they know how to cut it. See, so it passes all the way down the line, and it's enhanced all the way down the line. So where, and the ones who, the wholesalers, they don't deal with drugs. They give money out. They give out money, and then the drug people do all of the work. So you're never going to catch who's behind it because you're probably sitting somewhere looking at it.
Well, I'm hoping that they can, and I do believe that the police and law enforcement and the state's attorneys are working on that. I mean, I think, like I said, I think we need a dual approach. Clearly we need more treatment and more funding for treatment, but I do think we can't cut the law enforcement piece out.
Go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, I thank you for that last comment because that's what I wanted to ask you about is the more money for treatment. I read somewhere that to lock somebody up in prison for 30 years costs in excess of $1 million. And it seems to me the fundamental issue here is the enemy is really not other people. The enemy is the disease.
I agree.
And if you agree, it seems to me it makes sense to pour that $1 million into treatment to dry up the demand. And the supply, I mean, it's like whack-a-mole out there.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that as I think Mark mentioned, the war on drugs, this is a variation in the war of drugs. This is a variation in criminalization of a disease system. And it seems that every spare dollar ought to go towards the public health approach. And that $1 million to lock up one person, never mind the legal fees getting him or her there, is a lot more valuable for us as a society if we're able to redeem a person who's lost from addiction.
Again, I still think it takes two approaches. And I've seen the number about the $1 million for 30 years. But keep in mind, in all likelihood, the charges aren't going to be only this one. And I would assume that some of these dealers would, you know, may fall under the Kingpin statute and some other statutes that really are designed just about the drug trade. But, you know, this is one additional tool, and if they got 20 years on the Kingpin, they're not going to get 30 also on the homicide in all likelihood. And it'll depend on how strong the connection is.
But then why have?
This isn't going to be an easy way for the state to prove the connection, as you pointed out earlier. But when you're talking about putting the money only, I agree it's a public health concern, and it is whack-a-mole. But that doesn't mean that we just say it's okay to deal in Maryland. And, you know, when I, like I said, we had two panels. We had a panel of mothers who had lost children that very much wanted to know that the person that, you know, the origination of this heroin that killed their child somehow had to face.
It wouldn't bring their child back.
I don't disagree with you, and you are one of the individuals that, again, there was a second panel that said, don't bother with this. But we did hear testimony from two sides.
Yeah.
And that's what we're struggling with, to also make sure that the bill isn't going to catch or wrap into prosecution individuals that we don't want prosecuted.
So, Mark, you have something. Go ahead. Mark,
yes. I think this – I mean, it also touches on the point, though, that we're talking about dealing in Maryland and drug use in Maryland in general, and that talking about stopping drug use, or I think we're actually we have to realize, too, that people use drugs. People use heroin. People use all these things. And this is sort of a part of life where we live, and how we address that has many different solutions. But I feel that talking back about this drug war again, we have created this underground market with it by focusing on prohibition and criminalizing it. We've created this market that's unregulated. Like we were saying, people will make drugs stronger to make more of a profit off it. And it's having this unregulated market out there makes it far less safe. And I think we should be focusing on how we can make this safer. It's a reality right now. We're not gonna end drug dealing right now. We're not gonna completely solve all these things. Not just with this bill, but just in the next couple of years, we're not gonna solve all these issues.
No.
We need to look at how we can make these things safer. If people are using, I think we need to be looking at how we can make it safer for them.
And that's where the public health end comes in, which, for what it's worth, is not my committee. Not that I'm not interested in the issue, but it is where public health comes in and making sure that there are clinics available for people to get this, you know, the counteracting drug, and that there is a lot of mental health facilities that are available for those that really do want to break away, and you know, recognizing that it's so addictive, people go back, but they need to be able to then go back to the clinics.
So I one of the things that Delegate DeMay, before you have to go, and I do really appreciate you taking the time here. This has really been important for us to have this conversation with you. That it would be interesting to see the House and the Senate really wrestle with the legal aspect of this question. Mm-hmm. For 40 years or more, we've been wrestling with this issue of going after and ending heroin. It has never happened.
Right.
You know, it has never happened because it's almost because of the nature of the business itself.
I know. It's insidious.
And so we end up, what are we going to say? I'm sorry, Woody.
Back in 1958, when did Gene Lipscomb overdose on drugs?
Big Daddy Gene? Big Daddy Lipscomb?
Yeah, let me tell you about it.
Right, right.
What, around 58, 59.
Around 59, right. Yeah.
He was on Avenue Party, as usual, with the crew. And
yeah, he was my mother's friend. He used to come to our house. I remember.
Yeah, well, the guy that he left the crowd with, we were all at the, you know, midnight show and all of that stuff on it. And he left the crowd with a guy that was a friend of mine. I don't know. I ain't going to give no names because it's a matter of historical record now anyway. Timothy Black, we used to call him Hoppy. And they went and bought some drugs, went to Hop's place, did the drugs. Lipscomb died. Hop got locked up. Remember?
I do remember. Mm-hmm. We're talking about Big Lipscomb. He was a tackle for the Colts.
Yeah. Cults. You see, and they locked Hop up and charged him with murder. Remember?
Yes, I do remember. I was a little boy, but I remember that very well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a closing thought for us, Delegate, before we take a break?
Really, just that it's going to take a combination of a lot of things, and I, you know, really don't disagree that more funding in the mental health area and for treatment is a better solution. I just don't want to leave out tools for law enforcement that could be helpful.
Delegate, it is Kathleen, correct?
Yes, correct.
I had two words written down. I want to make sure I had the right name.
No, absolutely. Call me Kathleen. That works.
Good. Delegate Kathleen DeMay has been joining us, and she's one of the sponsors of Bill 222. We'll be talking more about that in the coming weeks with this delegate and others.
Sure.
And she represents the 15th District of Montgomery County. Thank you so much, Kathleen, for being with us here.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye. We're going to take a very brief break and come back with our guests to continue this conversation. Our guests in the studio, and go to the phones, and Wayne and Kevin are holding on. We're going to come to your calls as we go to this break, and we're going to break with That's Maps by the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, Brian Chase, their drummer, 1978. He was born. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We went to break. I wasn't listening to the song very carefully. Obviously, it was Shop Around by the Miracles, which on number one on this day in 1961, it became the first Motown single to sell a million copies. That was the Yeah Yeah Yeahs that we came back in with. So let me just be clear about my music for all of you. We are here on the Mark Steiner Show. I want to remind you, as we get into this conversation, to join us tonight at Red Emma's at 7:30 for a screening and discussion of the film Food Chains, which is about the Immokalee workers in Florida who fought to improve their conditions and the state of the food that they were harvesting, and how all that and their farm laborers worked affects all of us and the food we eat. It's being co-sponsored by the Center for a Livable Futures Food and Faith Project and the Center for Emerging Media, which produces The Mark Steiner Show. More information at redms.org. But join us there tonight at 7:30 for the film and the panel that I will be moderating and will be playing all this program next week. We are here with Woody Curry, who's a therapist in private practice, a clinical consultant who runs programs in Maryland addressing substance abuse and mental health problems. Mark Sine is executive director of the Baltimore Student Harm Reduction Coalition. Peter Bruin is an artist, curator, and organizer behind the New Day campaign, which is challenging the social stigmas around drugs, addiction, and mental illness, whose daughter died of a heroin overdose just a little over a year ago. And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. And I think that I just to come back in, and the delegate's no longer with us on the air, but I think it was an important conversation to have, and I appreciate the gentleman the way that you handled the conversation in a very kind of civil way, because that's the only way we can actually make these things change and work.
Sure.
And I think what you were trying to make the point at the end, Woody, just before you opened the phones here, was that how little things have changed. And you were saying during the break how many younger delegates don't have the history of where.
Yeah, all of the stuff that everybody's doing now has already been done. It's all criminalization of a public health problem. And to call it and to just pick out little different pieces of it and continue with the same thing, I mean, it doesn't work. You try something for almost 40 or 50 years and it doesn't work. I mean, what do you keep doing it for? You know, one of the things you tell an addict. Now, when I say addict, most people think I'm talking about people who take drugs. Addiction is bigger than drug use. One thing you tell an addict or a person whose behavior has gotten out of control to the point where it's interfering with everybody else's life and theirs and his too. Once you tell an addict it's okay, then he's going to do it. Most of the addictions are set up by things that are okay.
What does that mean?
What I mean is that the majority of the money made off of drug use is not generated by the addict as you define him on the street using drugs. It's a $458 billion a year business. Now, you tell me where pill popping and nickel and dime bags or drugs generate that kind of income. You see what I'm saying? Addiction money is part of the economy. All right? And they're not going to shut it down. They're trying to control it, politicize it, and everything else, but it's not going to be shut down. And people just don't want – they consider the addict as collateral damage. Right. The amount of people that really need treatment and stuff, that's considered as collateral damage. I hate to say it, but that's the way the policies play out.
So let me get some quick thoughts here from my other guests. And if you want to jump in there, we have tons of people calling in. I'm going to get them on the air with us and hear their thoughts in the last half an hour of the program here. Gentlemen, Mark Sine.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about these things that don't work. We're doing these things that don't work anymore. I mean, they've never worked. And what we need to do is actually find solutions to these problems that are working and have evidence to show that they do work. I mean, if we're talking about preventing overdose deaths, something that has been shown to work is naloxone distribution. And naloxone is, to put it simply, an opioid reversal medication. It knocks the opioids off the brain receptors and replaces it. So if someone is not breathing, it helps them come out of an overdose. Our group right now is doing an overdose prevention and a naloxone distribution program to try to educate people about how to recognize an overdose and how to inject. It's an injectable drug. It also can be used nasally, but it's to use this drug naloxone to help someone come out of an overdose and save their life. I mean, this is not going to solve the broad social issues, but it's at least a life saving idea. And then we have so many further ideas we can work with. Like we have things like needle exchange programs. Like that's not just giving out clean needles to people who use drugs, but it's also people who use drugs are more than often socially stigmatized, and they often don't receive the medical care that they need. People who use injection drugs have this broad social stigma about that, and often going to a needle exchange is the only place where they get comprehensive health care.
So let me open the phones here for my channel. Is that all right, y'all? 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to Wayne's been holding on for the entire show. Let's get him on the air, then we'll go to Reggie. Wayne, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. First of all, my stepson died of overdose about 10 years ago. I found him, and so I sympathize with everybody involved with that. Second of all, my point is, since our ill-fated invasion of Afghanistan, the opium market has has blossomed like nothing it's ever seen before. And many of the avenues into this country go directly back to, I would assume, back to our CIA, our contractors, our military, because it doesn't go through quite as rigorous an inspection when it comes out of that country into this country for that kind of stuff. And very similar to Air America in Vietnam and Laos, and the also the cocaine trade out of South America during the 80s, the crack epidemic. Same method was used to deliver.
Wayne, did we just lose Wayne? Wayne, I'm sorry, we're losing on your cell phone here, but let me just pick up what Wayne was talking about. There's no accident that a lot of the invasion of drugs into America, the explosion, have been built around certain wars and things that we've done in this country. Where Vietnam, that used to be the Golden Triangle,
right,
where all the heroin came from. Now it's Afghanistan and other parts of that world, and of course the Contra wars and everything else in South America.
I don't want to get in geopolitics.
Why not, man?
Man, because I don't feel like
I just messed with you.
See, that's why I'm independent right now. I do things for a couple of different programs that are behavioral health. One is a women's program that I developed since I left the other stuff that I was doing. And that's up and running. It's pretty innovative, and it's doing real good. It's funded and certified and everything. New approach. Specializes in women, Light of Truth. And then I have like four or five counties in Southern Maryland with this agency called Running to Recovery that I'm helping with putting the behavioral aspect to the treatment thing. So it's behavior change is what needs to be addressed, really. I mean, we can bat around feelings and ideas for centuries. Behavior change is what's needed, but most people don't really know how to implement it or don't have the skill sets to put it in place or whatever it is. But it's obvious that drug use is a behavior. Addiction is a pretty complex disease. I mean, it's a neuroadaptive developmental process. So the whole question of treatment is shifting around more to a medical approach that actually works, right, which is a behavior change. But until we get to that place, I mean— I really don't have an answer.
I think part of the problem is I want to turn to Peter here for a moment and then go back to the phones and Sandra and Kevin come to your calls. To go finish with what Wayne was saying, I think that one of the reasons that it's so difficult to address the interdiction problem and the legal problem going after heroin is just what he was talking about. It's a huge, massive international issue.
That's not where the solution lies. That's the issue. You say you don't want to talk about geopolitics is because it's not where the solution lies. And I think the solution lies, quite honestly, in a more healing world and a more compassionate world and a world that doesn't demonize those who are affected by the world and caught up in that world, because it's economics, it's behaviors, it's in our system. And speaking of behaviors, when you lose a child, you go crazy, and you start losing control of your own behaviors. And I feel really grateful that what kind of took me over was feelings of compassion, and I couldn't control that. It was just what swept me up, and I'm really grateful because I've gotten so many gifts from that. And I do see when parents lose a child, you want to do something about it. And that impulse could be to blame somebody and to put somebody behind bars, and that'll make it right. But that's an impulse. And my opinion, it's an irrational impulse, because that's not going to do anything for your own pain. Your child is still gone. And it's pain on top of pain, because the person you're putting in jail is suffering already because they're in this system and they're not finding help.
I think that, and I, before we leave here this program, I want you to have a chance to talk a bit about the what you're organizing over this next year that the Mark Steiner Show will be involved with as well. But I think it's really important in your approach to all this. There are a lot of folks calling. I do want to get their calls, so very quickly, Woody, I want to get to the phones here.
I know what you're talking about. My oldest son died from heroin addiction, and me being a therapist and had to watch him die. Okay? I went through that. That's why I do what I do. My sister has lost 3 children to drugs, and I had to deal with that, right? So that's why I do what I do. Okay, that's exactly why I do what I do. This is why I do what I do. Not because, and that's why I don't get into all this politics and all this mess, this institutionalized stuff. I got to do personally what I know works, you see, to see that the effort and that these people are personally belong to me, blood people, didn't just die out of ignorance and stuff. So that's what motivates me, too. You know, I never told you about that because I don't go around.
I knew about you, son.
Yeah, I know. But see, like you said, it's not going to help me to keep talking about that. What I need to do is what I can do now about the problem. So I understand where you're coming from.
I think this is very important. I think this is the voices that have to be heard really clearly in our society, and even wrestle with folks who experience what the two of you have experienced and who want revenge. I think that's a dialogue that has to take place between people, because we have to open that up if we're going to get to the heart of this with our hearts. 410-319-8888. Sandra, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning, Sandra.
I would like to share that I don't want to make light of anybody's comments or anybody's efforts, but I am in agreement with the gentleman about getting into the politics of this, because there are a myriad of reasons as to why we have the problems that we have with drugs, and getting and putting people in jail is not the answer, definitely not, because that's just scraping the surface. And I believe strongly in behavioral change, and I'm also not in agreement with the methadone program, because that's just substituting another drug for the heroin. I know people personally, and I watch my brother go through the same thing, and he eventually succumbed because the things that they use to break these drugs down, they break the organs down. They destroy the heart muscles. They destroy the liver. So it's an ongoing battle in terms of, you know, what we're going to do to try to combat these problems. But I do feel that we need to definitely maybe perhaps get a target population of individuals who have been clean for a number of years, 10 years or more, and find out from them what strategies they used, what they think would help this problem.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Actually talk to the people who have lived and have survived. I do believe that if you are addicted to something, those urges never go away unless divine intervention has come in and remove those feelings from you. Addiction is a stronghold, and when someone is on drugs, the whole family is on drugs, not just the person that's on it. Everybody is affected by it. You know, today, right now, my brother's children and wife are still dealing with the after effects, even though he has been gone for 10 years now. It's an ongoing battle. And I don't think we need to point the finger at one another, but I am not into the politics things because that stuff doesn't work. We got to start with behavioral change and talk specifically with those that have been delivered from this illness.
Sandra, thank you so much for sharing that. Let me respond to what she was saying.
I'd say, it's a really important point, and we need to humanize this as an issue. And we often look at drug users as less than. And it's our brothers, our sisters, our mothers. It's people we know that do this. And I have to stop the stigma around drug use as well. Looking at people as failures for using drugs. It's choices people make in their lives. I mean, this is the idea about harm reduction, is that we have to meet people where they're at, and we have to talk to the people who use drugs and who do these things that might be risky behaviors, and ask them, like, what's best for them, what works for them. Abstinence doesn't work for everybody. We have to find out things that help people address the issues and their what works for them best. Like the idea of harm reduction is that we're not – it's not condoning drug use. It's not condemning drug use. It's just trying to look – humanize it and be compassionate about what people need for themselves. What will work for somebody? How can we look at people as people who make choices in their lives and stop condemning them? Part of this is changing the mindset around this. When we're looking at something from a law enforcement approach, it's looking at people as criminals. Instead, we need to look at this, again, as a public health issue and look at the people involved. Look at them as human beings and as equals on our part.
Drug use, I mean, everybody – well, see, part of the discussion is that with me is that addiction, like you say, you don't want to talk about it, but it's the same thing. It is bigger than just drug use. You can keep treating drug use ad infinitum, right? The brain has changed, okay? The body has changed. The body is chemically dependent, and all of those behaviors you see with the drug use is who that person is. That is an adaptive process that's taken place over a period of years and years, and the behaviors were probably in place long before the drugs even showed up. It's complex. It is not as simple as just locking people up for using drugs and all of that. Those are the outcomes of the addiction. You see, it is a bigger problem than just drug use. We've been treating drug use for years and years and years. It's the brain, okay? It's the brain. And I know when I say that, that's when people say, well, I don't know what you're talking about. So, and it's hard to explain. And I've done it before.
Yes.
With Dr. Miller, right? It's the brain. That's the best I can say. You change the behavior, the brain rewires itself. The body adapts to the new behavior. You still have the drug behavior, but it's not the latest behavior you have. You've instituted a different wiring pattern throughout your system. And that takes a period of time to adapt to. And the body will do the rest. Habituation, automaticity, they will adapt to a better lifestyle the same as they adapted to the dysfunctional lifestyle. And that's where the behavior comes in.
Peter?
I think you could take a call.
410-319-8888. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you very much.
Hi, Kevin.
First of all, I wanted to answer a question that you all had, and then I want to ask one of my own. At the beginning of the program, there was a question about the statistics on heroin and opioid deaths in the state of Maryland. According to the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, in the first 9 months of 2014, there were 428 heroin-related intoxication deaths, and in the same period, there were 252 prescription opioid-related deaths. And there are no numbers for the last quarter of 2014.
I noticed that.
But the numbers for the first 9 months are virtually equal to all of 2013, so it's likely that 2014 will be much more than so. We are seeing a spike in the tragic deaths in this way. My question actually is about the comparison though between the opioid use and the heroin use. According to the National Institute of Drug Abuse, the opioid use is about three times the size of the heroin use in the country. About 600,000 people use heroin in a given year, and about 1.8 million use these prescription opioids. And many of them who are using these, that's the 1.8 million are people who are considered to be abusing the opioids prescriptions, not just...
Right, I understand.
But those folks say that they turn to the heroin when the prescriptions run out or something like that. And that couldn't our efforts be concentrated as a public health measure on the aggressive overuse of opioid prescriptions, which according to the National Institute of Drug Abuse in testimony before Congress, we use about 80% of the world's supply of these things in our nation when we only have 5% of the world's population.
That is a really powerful thing to be have said. Peter?
Yeah, I just wanted to agree with you and provide my own daughter as a case study where her introduction to opiates was OxyContin back in the early 2000s when it was more readily available. And then when folks started to wake up to how readily available it was and the supply started to get clamped down on, she was addicted to opiates, and heroin was the place to find it. And I think that's the gateway for so many. And that's frankly, I think, honestly, why this is suddenly news. It's because it's white folks who are dying. Mm-hmm. It's white folks who are dying now. It's no longer just the black folks. And when black folks were dying, people weren't paying attention the way they are now when white folks are dying.
I was going to say the top of the hour, but I didn't say that. I'm glad you did say that because I think that is one of the reasons we're politically paying attention to that at this moment. It's happening all over the counties. And I think that what Kevin was saying is, you know, people always talk about the gateway drug to heroin is marijuana. We hear that over and over all the time. And what Kevin is saying and what you've been saying for years, the gateway drug, one of the gateway drugs to heroin are the legal drugs that are prescribed.
I heard somewhere, and I can't cite the source, I think it was an article in the New York Times, where marijuana is legalized, in states where it's legalized, opiate overdoses are going down.
So when we wrestle with these things, and I'm glad, Kevin, I appreciate your call and what you brought to the table here. Just very quickly, I want to go around the room and kind of close out our conversation here. I mean, when we have the politicians back on the air, maybe have one or two back on with them again, what do they need to wrestle with as they're looking at this? This is where the rubber's going to meet the road the next – I'm not expecting miracles out of the state legislature, but what would you say to them?
I'd say I'd just go back to the point again. Like we've been – I don't want to keep hammering the same idea, but I will. It's a public health issue. Not to completely remove law enforcement from it, but it needs to have much more focus on public health now. And that there are things that work for this. If we're trying to prevent overdose deaths and if we're trying to address drug use, there are things that work that aren't incarcerating people. I mean, like I've mentioned, things like more comprehensive treatment and even ideas like broader ideas like housing. I mean, just something as simple as making sure someone is housed and has stable housing really can help them with their drug use. I mean, people experiencing homelessness often have co-occurring drug use problems and mental health problems. We've seen from things like Housing First programs, like in Salt Lake City, in 10 years they've been able to reduce their homeless population by 70% through Housing
Right.
First. That ties into drug use as well. When someone has a stable situation in their life, they're then able to address the other issues like mental health and drug use.
So, Peter, and as you respond here, also talk about the program you're doing this year. I want people to hear about this.
So first I want to answer your first question about what the legislators need to pay attention to. Frankly, they need to pay attention to the budget and the economics of it because it makes no economic sense to invest in incarceration. And you want to save a dollar, invest in treatment. And I think that what's happening is there's a lot of fear of voters thinking folks aren't being tough on what's going on or aren't coming up with solutions. And I think that the legislators ought to take some responsibility as part of the educators of what's real, of this as a disease and not a choice, of this being an ailment and not a criminal behavior. And so the New Day campaign is really all about humanizing, building compassion, and generating understanding of what is really happening with behavioral health conditions. And it's not us and them. And it's us. We're all in this together, and we all stand to benefit if we serve those who suffer with compassion and care versus punishment. So it's an arts-based campaign with stories behind the art that have that goal of building awareness. And it's going to be in the last quarter of 2015 throughout the Baltimore region with a ton of public programming. And we're hoping to help us understand how a more compassionate world can make a difference.
And we'll be following this campaign very closely. We'll be part of it as well, helping write to some of these stories on the air. And I think it's going to be a very important component, as Peter always brings to the table here with how he mixes art and social justice in our community. A very quick final thought, Woody Curry.
No thought. I pretty much, what I'm doing now, it works. And I have, clients and agencies where we've implemented behavioral health programs. and it works, and the clients seem to respond better when they know what, you know, honestly what the problem is and what they can do about it. Take the time to have clients like that. And I no longer work with any institutionalized treatment. And that, you know, it's because you need to find innovative ways, like you said, the creative part of a person will heal that person. You know, and this stigma with it and stuff like that, it doesn't work.
Well, we have to come back to our monthly visits with Woody Curry. We haven't done that in a while. Woody was here every month to talk about these issues and more, and I could see a great dialogue taking place. It's always good to see Woody Curry, my brother. Good to have you in the studio. Peter Brown, I'm glad you're in here today. It was good to have your voice of gentleness, given what you've gone through to have been here. Mark Stein, good to meet you. Good to have you on
Thank you for having me.
Remind you, as we get out of here, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to testing, you can learn about what's important by visiting MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org, or go to SteinerShow.org, and there is their banner. Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andrea Melton. Our intern and Day in History research producer is Sienna Greaves. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. On our way out of here, we're hearing Lift Every Voice and Sing, as sung by Aretha Franklin, which was first publicly performed as a poem on this day in 1900. To podcast The Mark Steiner Show and share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.